Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. Welcome to Automates, Max. How are you?
Good. How are you, Ben?
Very good. Very good. It's been a long time. Well, it's not actually. I think I saw you for about 20 minutes in New York at Legal Week, but it's been a long time since we've had a good old juicy chat. So I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be good. Max, for the benefit of others, why don't you give us a quick intro of where you're working, what you do, and a bit of background.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the Director of Innovation Solutions at Troutman Pepper Locke. My job is mostly to oversee four of our main innovation teams, our document automation team, our client collaboration team, our emerging solutions team, and our platform innovation team.
So the last two sound interesting. So yeah, all of it sounds interesting. The last two sounds more interesting because it's less prescriptive. It sounds like there's things in there as opposed to document automation. So you focus on that, and I get that. But the emerging tech and the platform side of things sounds really interesting. So maybe we might jump into some of those things over the course of the chat. Max, how long have you been at Troutman and doing this kind of technology legal kind of role?
So I've been at Troutman for 14 years. I moved over to what was called Practice Solutions at Pepper Hamilton back in 2019. We merged with Troutman Sanders in 2020, and that became the initial of the innovation team. And then we merged recently in January with Locke Lord to become Troutman Pepper Locke.
Cool. And so your background is pure tech, pure IT, pure kind of thing, or have you got a legal training or anything else?
Yeah, so my legal training came similar to you from the law firm, working in the law firm. I've been in IT, started in IT. I was a local ops for the Boston location for two major law firms, U.S. law firms, and learned everything there was between legal and technology and merged it together at one point.
Nice. So I used to describe my role as this little, I was either a fixer or the translator between IT and the business to try and help people. Okay, you mean that, and you're saying this, and then literally translating it so that they could understand what was going on. But that was a long time ago. That was, I don't know, 2005, 2006, something scary like that. It shows how old I am. Look, you can see how gray I am. So I guess one of the things that's interesting is that we talk a lot, and we have talked a lot over the years about the role of innovation in firms. What does that look like? There is a distinct difference between and sort of journey that I think firms have been on in terms of the UK-US split or US and others. Talk to me about the innovation cycle, if you will, within where you are, what makes you tick, not you specifically, but your team, and what are you getting your teams to think about, some of the softer skills, and then how does that relate to what you're seeing in the general market within the US, sort of the rise of that innovation function? What does that do?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think for us, innovation kind of took the ways of the UK, where the innovation team was started outside of IT. You see a lot of innovation teams either start part of knowledge management or you start part of IT. We started out of just our own group, a spin off of IT. Into our own group, which allowed us to kind of to do things a little differently. We had our own budget. We had a little more autonomy of what we were trying to do, which allowed us to grow faster and then look at the firm as a whole and see what other teams within the firm should join innovation so that we grew. So we went from 3 to 30 to now close to 50 people in innovation. Now actually knowledge management and innovation. We have become a KM&I team like many. But the reverse side of it, we were innovation first and knowledge management joined us versus having innovation kind of spin out of knowledge management.
Wow. That's a good number of people.
We have grown very large, wouldn't say quickly, but we've grown to be a solid team, able to do a lot of things that has allowed us to kind of grow not only the team, but what we're doing in innovation. You know, I don't want to, what are we, 5 minutes in, I'm going to drop the word AI, but we were able to, by this, do more generative AI stuff, because now with the knowledge management team, we're looking at knowledge management resources and research services with Gen AI, and then, you know, all the other innovation tools that are out there in legal ops. So,
no, I think it's really interesting. I think that sort of you spinning back into sort of a modern KM&I team, if you will, makes a lot of sense. And I think having known you and the guys that you work with and for, it's not just the fact that innovation's sort of rising. I mean, I know some of the projects that you've been working on, and it's about the value that you're adding back into the business. And how does that give you sort of, what's the optionality like? So if you're traditional IT and you're delivering project after project after project, and you're sat there going, okay, well, we're doing that, but it feels very BAU. It doesn't feel like we're testing the boundaries of what we can do. And I guess the leadership function at Troutman back in the day saw that opportunity to break out. Let's go experiment. Let's go and add value. Let's go and see what happens. And then obviously having you as part of that concrete team was the foundation of the success, obviously.
Yeah, we kind of created a secret sauce of sorts. And the firm did, another thing at the time of the merger, we moved part of our marketing team out and created a client experience team. That client experience team with innovation to try to add value back to our clients. And so innovation was a value add. It still is a value add to our clients and a lot of the things we do, especially around client collaboration, which was kind of something that was not seen in the market yet. It was very early days at other law firms. First thing that, the firm purchased was HiQ, and that sent us off running into a direction of how can we add value back to our clients.
Yeah. And I think that's where it's at. There's that constant idea that you can turn what's in a lawyer's brain and turn it into some kind of digital experience, whether that be in combination with some of your more traditional tech, but ultimately it's about how do you be stickier to your customers? What can you do? How can you add that value? What are the touch points that you can drive? I think you talk about client experience, and I think that's one of the things that I see a lot of firms talking about and typically narrowly looking at a classic portal kind of experience. What does that look like? I mean, the types of services that you're providing to your clients, do you see them evolving beyond where they are today? Do you see that kind of extending sort of the, you let the cat out of the bag with AI, sort of extending the sort of the access that you have to your own knowledge and research and understanding, but then making that client facing through these kind of like portals and experiences?
Yeah. So that's the big thing. Where can we, take our knowledge, share it out to our clients in a format, a delivery service. So HiQ has become our delivery service of sorts. We use what HiQ has to offer, and then we add on to it from there. But it's looking at, same with document automation. Another thing that's been around forever, but we're looking at new ways to use document automation and then deliver it through either HiQ or some sort of portal to make it easier for our attorneys to deliver documents to our clients.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. And I think that's that kind of, I guess, where the branch of emerging tech and stuff coming out. So it must be very difficult as a buyer of legal tech and a user of legal tech, where you've got some foundational aspects. So you might have a Doc Auto platform. You've mentioned HiQ. You've got other tools that form your armory, if you will. If you're going to go to a ninja cupboard and you're going to go, right, what have I got? I've got all of these things. How do I bring them together to create a solution? Or is that the one thing that needs? How do you get into that kind of that emerging tech? Is it 99% of the time AI kind of thing? Or are you disrupting yourselves with some of the ideas that you had good foundations of and good successes with? But, everyone knows that you've got to iterate from where you are today. what's your emerging tech strategy? What does that look like?
So in a lot of ways, it's looking at the pain points for the attorneys and listening. And then it's looking at first our current tech stack. So what do we have? What are we using? Is this solution that we have still doing what we purchased it for a few years ago and still doing what it needs to do? Or is there something newer out on the market that we need to look at and slowly start to transition out? And maybe the attorneys that are complaining, bring that technology in so that they can start working and cover those pain points and then eventually either replace the tool or run two concurrent tools at the same time as long as they're licensed correctly.
No, that makes sense. And so and I think that gives you guys that kind of optionality, because I mean, oftentimes, and I've been there. I mean, I was at IQ before and I'm at Autologix now. My tech is good at a bunch of stuff, but you know that there are things that it's not good at, because why would it be good at everything? It doesn't make any sense. So you then start to think about, okay, well, integration points, or if you're the right, I mean, if I imagine if you're sat in your shoes, it's like, is this the right tech tool? You know, you start to think about, okay, well, what's best for the lawyer? What's best for the firm? What's best for our clients? How are we going to deliver those outcomes more effectively, more profitably? What does that look like? And so I guess that it feels like that's one of the drivers that sits behind the strategy and how that sits. I've asked a couple of people, particularly who are on the law firm side of things, this question in the last few podcasts, and it'll be interesting to get your take. As somebody sat there looking at the market and looking at the hundreds and hundreds of technologies that are available these days, it seems bonkers. From when I first started at HiQ in 2011, I don't know, there were might be 300 products out there in the legal tech world. Five main buckets of things, and you'd start to look at, okay, well, I need one of those, I'll buy that, and everything else. Now, it's almost like there's so many. Where do you start? What's your team's sort of view on, okay, well, you've done that assessment of the pain point. You've realized the tech you've got doesn't quite fit the problem that you've got. Let's go to market. How do you then start to think about working through the plethora of new tools, all the latest AI stuff, all those bits and pieces? Have you got a framework? Have you got a strategy? What do you lean on to sort of get make the right decision?
Yeah, so I think the big thing for me is I'm looking for a software. Now, one software, there's probably four or five different versions of a software. So then it's basically interviewing the company itself, not so much the tech right away, but the company. Can this company, as I'm an innovation team, I don't have a training team behind me to start training my users. I'm not looking at an enterprise solution, so I'm not bringing IT in yet. So what can you do for me? Can you train my users? Can you supply me with documentation? Can you handle support? So if my users have a problem at, 3 o'clock in the morning, can you solve that problem for that? Can you get on a chat with them? Is there somebody available? How are you strategized? So we look at all of those things before we actually bring on a product. Then we look at the product itself. If they check all those boxes and their security is good, then we look at the product itself and say, okay, does the product actually solve the pain point? But it's making sure that for an innovation side that we're working with the right company that's going to be able to do that. And we've been really successful, luckily, with picking up some really good vendors over the course of the last few years that have been able to handle that for us. And we were very close to two of our technologies moving it over to IT, and then we had another merger. And IT's like, we don't have time to take this on yet right now. So we'll come back, we'll revisit it. And I'm like, great, back to the vendor. Can you support our firm, our size, with support? And usually the answer is yes, because they're staffed up that way. We look correctly. We looked at what we were looking for. And you meet those companies, and there's a lot of fly-by-night companies that are out there, and there a lot of the companies out there are looking to be acquired. And we're also looking at that too. We're looking at, we don't really want to find that company that's only out there just to be acquired. We want to find a company that's looking to grow themselves.
Yeah. No, I think that talks to a whole bunch of stuff. But I think what's really important there, and probably a message for startups and scale ups in the market and in the industry, when you're building a company, you've got to you've got to have the right attitude, you've got to have the right approach, but you've also got to hire the right kind of humans that you bring in, because the founder of a business can't be everywhere all the time. You build a culture of a particular way of working or a particular approach. And scaling challenges those things. But I think there's a thing to be said for looking at, okay, well, how do you do business? Not just at what you do, but how do you do business? Are you customer centric? Everyone says they are, but you know, there's so many organizations that make decisions and go, oh, actually, how's that going to impact my customers? You know, they don't necessarily think like that. So I think that's really refreshing, sort of starting to look at sort of who you're going to deal with rather than what it's going to do for you. Because, you know, it sounds like you're creating sort of strategic partners as opposed to your classic client vendor relationships. And that feels meaningful, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for. And we want partners because every tool on the market is designed for multiple firms to do whatever. But we've got a lot of innovative folks that have ideas, and we want to be able to bring those ideas to the forefront to keep evolving the technologies that we're working with. So we're looking for those clients who are open to that technology, to, you know, those ideas, to say, hey, great, you've got an AI functionality that has your built-in prompts. Well, here's a couple of prompts that we would like to throw into your tool. Would you be able to add this in? Or it's great that your tool does this, but could it do X, Y, and Z?
X, Y, and Z is always the easy answer. A, B, C, that's always the difficult one for us, always.
Sure.
Got a question for you, and it's not one that we said that we would talk about, but it's not off limits as well. So it's just a curiosity thing. An innovation team for me is about sort of bleeding edge, thinking about how you can drive forward with ideas, experiments, new vendors, new ways of working. How is Troutman set up to sort of transition those sort of things into a more rigid BAU kind of environment? Now, I know that you guys are set up in a slightly different way, but how would you advise innovation teams to start thinking about, okay, well, how do we not get burdened by the history? And how do we continue that innovation and exploration? But how do you then sort of bleed that across into BAU, apart from leaning on your vendors to do all your support and training?
So the big thing is not having the fail. We've brought on technology that hasn't taken off. We've run into that. But the next thing is finding the next vendor that may still do that same technology. Or, okay, we thought that attorneys, that was the pain point. We missed the mark. Let's go revisit it. And then it's working, scale it up with the firm itself. So with IT, with practice management, try to find the next ownership of it, if it works. HiQ is a prime example of that. It was originally a tool that we created to start an innovation and then eventually get up to IT to move it over to the internal collaboration team. And we have instead just scaled up the innovation client collaboration team. We brought on a new senior client collaboration manager recently, who has taken that over by storm, and he's going to build up his team. And so sometimes that just is the way it's going to be. So whether we can transition it out to IT or we scale up a team to handle it.
Yeah. And I think that's an important factor to think about is the when you've got that team that's so embedded in the solution and the ideas and has the connections into the lawyers, it's almost like you'd be losing something by just parking it in another budget line, in another team. So why scale that when you can scale in here and drive that forward? That makes sense. For things that you don't see the same kind of ownership for, I guess, is there a constraint on traditional innovation by having too much to look after once you've gone through that initial, we've proven the point, it works, let's find a home for it?
So we as an innovation team haven't hit that mark yet, but we okay. do, and we have talked about it when that time comes. And our hope is that it's not parking it somewhere else or say, but it's more or less just making sure that the right people keep the same relationship, but just move it over to a larger IT department that can handle it. And then we can kind of stay back because IT's got that enterprise app team that is scaled to do and handle. So when a tool is really ready for that, and again, we've been really close, but unfortunately, IT's had to take on additional projects that kind of scale back their team in that way to be able to use it that way. And our hope is to get back to that point soon.
It makes sense. And I think it's always that tricky. It's almost on a project by project basis. There's no right size rule or anything else. It feels like having been on the law firm side myself and at a vendor side, there's no right or wrong kind of answer there. It's just, it feels right until it feels wrong, maybe. Now, something that's sort of interesting that I think you were keen to talk about, but I see it day in, day out as a relatively small-ish compared to the big boys vendor growing and sort of doing stuff. Do you often find that there's an imbalance between the commercial needs of, say, an Autologix and an expectation, say, from a law firm perspective in terms of not everything's an enterprise deal, not everything is a big thing, it could be just two users here. What are you seeing with the trend at the moment, the market at the moment? I mean, obviously, there's lots and lots of technologies out there that want to be selling big ticket items to lots of big firms, but ultimately, it's not always possible. How do you balance that? What's the nature of your approach to those kinds of things?
Yeah, it's extremely tricky because, as you said, a lot of the vendors out there are looking to hit that, especially the sales guys are looking to hit that home run as soon as they especially meet with like a Troutman Pepper Lock, the size that we are. So when they come to us and they're expecting us to buy 200 licenses or, you know, or an enterprise license. And I'm like, I really just need 25 licenses or I really need 10 licenses, to be honest with you. Like it's not, I'm trying to solve a pain point for one practice group, one subgroup of a practice group. So niche that it like, this is what they need. And I don't have anything else that does it. And your tool does it on the market. You've got it, but I don't need to spread it out to everybody in the firm. Like just need to handle this one group. And it's a conversation and they feel like, well, okay, that's great that you want to do that. We're going to price it at this. And I'm like, well, great. Now you've priced yourself out of the market for us. So we've run into that in a handful of places where people see who we are out the door and then they get excited. And then I'm like, well, I really just need 10 licenses. And they're like, well, it's going to cost this. And I'm like, well, for that, I can go get something else. Like I've got a budget just like everybody else. Like, so unless you're able to, you know, negotiate a decent rate with us, I'll have to look somewhere else. I go look at an Autologix and go, okay, well, can you build me what this guy has already built? And can you build it to me for this price?
The answer is yes, by the way, Max.
Yes. Always the answer is yes.
But it's always that trick, isn't it? It's the battle of like scaling up. It's the battle of winning new business. It's that sort of journey that people go on and suddenly going, oh, look, it's a Troutman. That means it's a this size deal. And they put it in their forecast and then they realize actually it's there. It also comes back to the kind of relationship that you're building with these people, back to your own earlier answer for sort of what you're looking for in a tech vendor, is that actually the technology's over here. First, you've got to get through the are you a good bunch of humans test. And, you know, that is a big part of building up those sort of things. It's understanding, okay, well, what's the purpose? What's the culture? What are they trying to achieve? Do they look like they're going to be here next year? You know, all of these things that you go through as a little checklist. But yeah, I, from both sides of the camp, trust me, it's hard because it's the balance. It is the balance. But, you know, that's where it all goes through. Sometimes you sort of have to take a step back and go, okay, well, actually, you know, and I've done this recently with a particular firm, and you sort of, you look at it and you go, okay, well, yeah, all of these reasons make sense, but actually, can you do this for me? Can you do a case study? Can you do these things that actually I can use to show people? I mean, because there's a lot of firms out there that don't like doing case studies, that don't like doing press releases, that don't do it. And, you know, you get that and you understand that, but actually, there's negotiation with everything and starting to think about what that looks like.
That is the number one thing I throw on every contract is like, hey, think about what my firm's name and what my background can do to help you. So take that into account when you're giving me your pricing. If you want to have Troutman Pepper Lock on your slide, think about what that's worth to you at the end of the day. And then what is it worth for a case study and a LinkedIn post and all these other things that I'm more than happy to do. Now give me your new price and see if that works.
And then the sales guy will go, no. And then the founder will say, actually, there's value.
Right. Because I have people to offer, I have people to go back to as well. Like leadership's looking at me and going, well, what are you spending our money with?
Yeah.
It's not like I have a blank check.
Yeah. It would be lovely though, wouldn't it? Just a blank.
It would be. It would be so great. I have so many things on my shopping list.
Yeah, let's be honest with you. If we had a blank check, we wouldn't be doing the jobs we've got. Or are you talking about blank check in the context of the job that you've got? I mean, you know, my brain went, well, I'll just be in Aruba, surely. I don't need to. Aruba's fine. But anyway, that's the way it is. So we've talked about the role of innovation. We've talked about the role of, or how you see the role of your team, which is you've got lawyers, they have challenges, they have bumps. You want to overcome those bumps. You want to make sure that there's a frictionless kind of experience with the volume of technology and what happens. I think one of the things that not a lot of technology providers and innovation teams perhaps talk about, although there is a thread there, which is, okay, well, how are we not just enabling lawyers to do more because they can be quicker or they can be this, but how are we giving lawyers time back? How are we creating, what's the impact of the technology on productivity or efficiency? But why can't we just get it to do more so that they can do less? And it sounds weird because, you know, there'll be managing partners that they're going, no, they need to be billing time. But actually, you know, there's a role there of actually we're all humans. We've all got stuff to do. We've all got mental capacity to do a certain range of stuff. You know, that work-life balance, that structure. Do you see that technology and the strategic vision of law firms is going in the direction with that sort of stuff?
Even that's what I'm looking at when I'm talking to vendors, especially when every vendor tells me how much money they're going to save me because they're going to cut down the amount of time that an attorney is doing something so that they can put time into something else. And I'm like, no, I don't expect them to do that. Instead of working to midnight and they can finish a job at 10 o'clock or, you know, which is already ridiculously hours as it is. But the fact that they're able to turn off, you know, anywhere in a shorter amount of time is key. Work-life balance to attorneys is the most important thing. If we can cut out burnout rate on attorneys, which when I started in the field was like so high, you know, you were lucky if an attorney didn't, if an associate didn't make partner within the first 8 years, they usually were walking off the job or going to transition to something else. Because they were just burnt out. But now I'm seeing more attorneys, instead of turning to become partners, that are becoming either career associates or counsel and just like there to do the work. So I feel like the work-life balance is the most important thing. For a guy who started in the field in IT of burning CDs to create closing binders and working all hours of the night to get hundreds of CDs done and then up to the mailroom to get them mailed out and for a deal that had to go out the door, had to be postmarked by the end of the day, yeah. You know, and we're running to the airport to get it into FedEx's hands. And to now be able to do that, like, you know, with a piece of software to put together the binder and then email it out to the hundreds of people and be done in, you know, 2 hours versus like all night, praying to God you get to the airport by midnight.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing. And I think it's, you know, for what we do kind of intelligent automation. We help streamline processes and do a whole bunch of stuff. And actually, it's about the outcome, but it's the journey to the outcome. It's the, okay, well, what does the lawyer need to see? Does the lawyer need to touch every phase of this particular outcome? Or do they just need to see at phases 5, 8, and 12? Is there some technology or some human you know, is there a way of sort of introducing that level of automation, that level of sort of orchestration that sort of facilitates that? Ron Friedman, a long time ago, well, he was always used to talk about doing less law. It's like, can we do less law? Can we automate stuff? Turn that. And it sort of, it was always the prize of, you know, productivity. But ultimately, it's about how do we make lawyers' lives better? You guys, not me, but indirectly, we're there to provide technology to you to make your lawyer lives easier, lawyers, clients happier. All of that is a virtuous circle of like what it's supposed to be about. So yeah, it's interesting. I think that you talk about vendors having ROI charts and stuff like that. So we can save your lawyers this much money or this or whatever. And actually, it's the okay. Well, let's just make sure lawyers get home at a decent time type thing. And I think particularly, I don't know how you feel about this, and I don't know if this is translated in the US as much, but post-COVID, post-pandemic, you know, working-life balance became a thing because you were at home and then all of a sudden you were working from home more often than you were before. And it's like, oh, I'm going to knock off and pick up the kids from school at 5 o'clock, or I'm going to drop them off at school at 8:30 and be back at my desk for 9:15 or whatever. And that flexibility now is almost an expected given, if that makes sense. Yeah, there's times when you have to be doing stuff, but you know, there's an increased amount of flexibility. And I think technology affords that and it allows for that.
Yeah, 100%. I think especially the generation gap, like, but where I started my career and I barely saw my kid because I was working. So he was in daycare for most of the day. And then by the time I got home, it was feed him dinner and then it was off to bed. That was, you know, that was life. COVID hit and I was home for dinner at you know, we were able to play in the backyard before dinner, and then have dinner and then do something before bed and then bed. And now, you know, my son's a little bit older, but I've got a little one, and a little one on the way. And it's the same, you know, I want to have that same experience that I've been able to have in these last few years. And I was able to have at the start of my son's life. So it's great that if I can do that for myself, I'd love to be able to give it back to my attorneys to do the same thing. Cause everybody deserves to spend more time, you know, kids deserve to spend more time with their parents. Attorneys need to be able to spend more time with themselves, whether it's, you know, being able to read a book or watch a movie or whatever, to be able to just get back into like living life again.
Yeah.
And no, not just spending your whole day working.
Yeah. Nobody likes that. I don't like that. I don't like working at all. I'd like to do a lot less work. That would be lovely. Max, I think one of the things that sort of over the time, and we've talked about it already, but I think over the time I've known you, it's that sort of that community focused nature of you, what you do and how you sort of operate. And I think one of the things that I was chatting to somebody about a couple of weeks ago was sort of the industry events that we invariably always end up at, whether it be ILTA or Legal Week or whatever, and you start to look at that. And I think, what is the, since your time of burning CDs in a dark room and getting it posted out to sort of where you are today as Director of Innovation, is it Innovation Solutions? Have I got it wrong? Innovation Solutions. Got it right. Yay.
You got it right.
And it's sort of the journey. So you, as you said at the very beginning, you've got a similar journey to me. I mean, I've not legally trained. I'm barely trained at all, quite frankly. I'm not house trained, let alone anything else. So you start to look at the journey. And I've lent on a lot of industry cohorts over the years to learn from and evolve from. What are you seeing the trends around the community side of what we do? Is there an increased willingness to share between firms? Here's the pain points, here's the challenges, or we're talking to this vendor. Is there an increased willingness to share these days?
There is an increased knowledge share going on. I think you're seeing the way ILTA conferences are being run. More information is being shared at those conferences. Industry groups have become more of a thing. I think COVID forced a lot of those groups to go to remote. So a lot of those meetings were get scheduled and you'd have to arrive somewhere. So you had to book off time to be able to attend them. And because of COVID, we were able to take those to be virtual, and that has allowed us to continue those. So people are taking them, you know, at home, at their desk, and it's easier to jump off for a half hour to jump on a call or an hour to jump off a call than versus 2 hours to go leave your location to go to somewhere to have the meeting. Those, you maybe get 5 or 6 people, and you might get 15 to 20 to show up on a Zoom call. Also, and at least in the innovation industry, everybody's got something to bitch about. So
something
you jump
someone.
On a call.
Something or someone, Max.
Just everybody's got something to say. So you jump on a call, you know, and then you go run off for, you know, an hour on a topic out of just, you know, someone said, can you believe this vendor did this? Or can you believe I have this attorney that did this? And, you know, like, how do I fix that? It's just, so those are the things that make it so easy to have those industry shares that, and as long as everybody just keeps it quiet, nobody, you know, luckily a lot of the industry groups I'm in where we're not, I don't want to say we're secretive, but everything stays in the room. It's, you know,
yeah,
the Vegas rule.
Yeah, that makes sense. Or the Vegas rule. What's the Vegas rule, Max?
You know, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh, that rule.
Right, okay. That rule. But yes, the Chatham House rules, which someone still needs to explain to me. you know.
I know it's a thing.
So
I don't know the
still
definition.
Exist. Exactly. I know it's a thing. I know it gets said at every meeting. Don't know the full definition.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I think it's again, that community thing is one of the, it's the thing that is always, it's that little hidden gem in the industry that we operate in, sort of knowing that you've got that, got those little connections and those things that we can lean on and bitch about people, obviously. I mean, people, vendors, other things, situations,
and, you know,
problems.
They're not just local anymore. They're national.
Yeah.
Or international. And then when you show up at these ILTAs, so I will tell you the difference between the first ILTA I went to, where I just knew my local cohort, versus then I joined more of these industry groups. And now when I go to an ILTA, it's like meeting up with, like, it's a family reunion. You know, not just with vendors, but with other people in the industry. And I feel like lots of people have that same feeling.
Yeah. No, but that's the benefit of all of these kind of events, isn't it? You start to build up your cohort, and then you get introduced to another sub cohort, then you get, and then it goes around. Then all of a sudden, you just spend most of your time at the bar and not able to leave. I mean, did I say that? Anyway, it's fine. But yeah, no, I think it's one of those things that you, when you find a home, it's really nice to be able to lean into it. And I think it is because since the pandemic, it has evolved and it's become easier and there is an increased sharing as things go through. Talking of that, so when am I going to see your face in real human form next? Is it going to be ILTA?
It should be ILTA. I'm speaking on Thursday, so I'm definitely going to be there on Thursday.
Cool.
Whatever shakes out for the rest of the week, we'll see. But
nice. Perfect. Perfect. Well, I look forward to that. One final topic, because I know it's a topic close to your family's heart, but it's the, and it's the thing that I like too, but it's a divisive topic here in the UK. It's the need for a good Nando's.
Very true. It's the reason that ILTA National Harbour is my favorite, because there's a Nando's on site. Nando's huge in the UK. You guys all have your family's order on your phone. I unfortunately have to travel to get to one that's like at least 6 hours away. But it is delicious and a family favorite of mine.
And
so
something else that's important. Good food.
Very much so.
Bit of chicken. Max, thank you very much for your time today, man. It's always great to chat. Always great to hear war stories and share ideas. And you're always very kind and generous with both of those things. So thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Ben, for having me. You know, you mentioned this podcast a little bit ago that you were starting one, and just excited to join you for one, and excited to see where the things go for you.
Yeah, cool. Thank you very much, mate. Well, I think you're number 24. 22,
okay.
23, 24. So, you know, it's not a flash in the pan thing. It's not disappeared overnight. There is some kind of willingness. I think it's just because nobody's heard it that people say, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. It's fine. They don't know how informal and relaxed it all is. So anyway, I will see you very soon, Max. Keep safe. Keep well. Say hello to the family. And I will chat to you soon.
Sounds good, Ben. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Take it easy.